Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
So you have the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who was opposed to Ukraine aid. But as the Wall Street Journal now puts the headline, Mike Johnson opposed Ukraine aid, then he risked his job for it. Tony Katz today, good to be with you. You took the Senate legislation, and then you said to the House, pass this, about funding and for Ukraine and for Israel and for Taiwan. And the House said, nope, this doesn't have border funding. And now you have Speaker Johnson saying, here are these separate pieces of legislation. And why don't we send these back to you and you can pass them? And yet somehow the border is still at the end of the line, which has House Republicans up in arms. But how does the Senate look at this? Senator Todd Young joins us right now, the senior senator from the state of Indiana, my senator. I want to get into this with you, but before I do, the Senate takes up the impeachment of the Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, and Chuck Schumer brings a point of order, and Democrats decide for the first time in history, we don't have to have a trial. We think that this impeachment is bunk. What was your take and the sense of the Senate when that took place?
So I don't get outraged often. The more you consume some of the goings-on in the Senate, in the House, you become desensitized to the minor outrages. But I'll say this was a major big deal. The job of the United States Senate, when any official is impeached, from the President of the United States to the Secretary of Homeland Security, is to hold a trial, Tony. And we have just established a precedent that at the prerogative of the majority of United States senators, we don't do so. And so constitutionally, this strikes me as a fulcrum moment in the history of the body, that really the history of our country. Because we can now have renegade officials who, in the proper political atmosphere, will not be held to account for their offenses. And so I'm outraged by it, and we know why it happened. It happened, consistent with your lead-in, because Democrats don't want to discuss illegal immigration, our porous border, and the humanitarian meets national security crisis associated with all of that.
I wonder... I always put myself in the position of, if I was in the Senate, what exactly would I say to Chuck Schumer? And I guarantee you, I don't think I'd last in the Senate for very long. How is the conversation not brought to him? Just what the hell are you doing? What kind of Harry Reid nonsense is this? You will regret this one day. How does he somehow get away with not knowing how detrimental this is, that you don't have the Senate performing their constitutional task?
Well, you know, it's the classic case of sacrificing short-term political interests, indulging short-term political interests at the disadvantage of institutional kind of rules. So he has sacrificed the credibility. He has sacrificed the future, working order of the Senate, so that he might get short-term political gain. And I told you why he did it. We know that immigration will almost certainly continue to be the most resonant, the most important, the most consequential issue as we approach November. He knows that. Unfortunately, he placed that short-term consideration ahead of how our democracy works. That troubles me.
Talking to Senator Todd Young of Indiana, you bring up the border as I was discussing the moves from Speaker Mike Johnson to now bring back these pieces of legislation and state that, all right, here's funding for Ukraine, here's funding for Israel, here's funding for Taiwan, here's something else, and oh, here's some border funding, a border bill that would bring funding for the border that is along the lines of H.R. 2 that was already passed by the House that Chuck Schumer has not moved on. if I understand you correctly, you're somebody who believes in providing funding for Ukraine, that this is important to thwart the moves of Russia short term and long term. I am somebody who believes in funding Ukraine with weapons and ammunition, not with bodies and not with specifically dollars. But is it wrong for the people to note that the border should come first?
No, it's not wrong for the people to note that. I and others have been carrying the message that we need to do something on the border. In fact, we held this issue as a precondition in the Senate, you'll recall, late last fall. We're not going to fund Ukraine. We're not going to do anything with respect to their borders until we address border security. We won. We all held together, which is not something we always do on the Republican side in the Senate. Everyone was surprised. The left caved. Negotiations were pursued. We almost had a bill. And then we know kind of where that went. People perceived the bill, I think, correctly to not be enough. But it was something. I think we also should acknowledge that and observe fairly. Can't much of this just be done by Biden under existing law? Why do we even need a bill? Now we're back to wanting a bill. So I think we'd be intellectually dishonest not to point out we're in a bit of a whiplash situation, but I support the substance of AR2 the current border efforts that are being advanced in the House, which are very close to HR2. I think it's reasonable to ask for them. I just wish we would get our priorities straight because there's a certain inconsistency. What my greatest priority is right now, knowing that we're probably not going to get in this political atmosphere, members of the Democratic side to go for a bill, is that we need to stay focused on Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and not weakly, timidly, meekly use the lack of a border security bill advancing. We have to avoid a war.
So I'm going to ask you just to repeat some of that. You were breaking up a little bit when you say we have to avoid a war. Give me that again.
Yeah, we have to avoid a war. We are experiencing dangers on the three fronts that we're focused on, Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and the Indo-Pacific. But really, the threat vectors are coming from everywhere right now. And we need to do whatever we can to shore up the Ukrainian freedom fighters, the state of Israel, and the Taiwanese to deter any sort of aggression from their respective adversaries. And because a conflict in any of those areas could lead to, depending on the geography, heightened terrorism, massive increases in oil and gas prices and tanker economy, and larger conventional conflict between NATO countries and on one hand and Russia on the other. So that's the last thing the American people want right now. For comparatively modest investment, we should be advancing these bills irrespective, I would say, in the end, of whether or not we can get liberal Democrats to vote for a new border bill. That will be litigated, I suspect, in November of this year.
So where I think the people are, I should say the Republican base is, and if you want to call it a Trump base, you can, talking to Senator Todd Young, senior senator of Indiana, is that you can move all these other pieces of legislation about funding for Israel, Taiwan, Ukraine, but you have to move the border first. And why not make all those other things conditional on passing the border funding, which is really said differently? Why is it that the Republican Party doesn't play the level of hardball that we just discussed the Democrats playing when they're willing to dismiss impeachment?
Well, so we did play the level of hardball last fall. We won that battle in the Senate. We all held strong. We were able to get a negotiation on a border security bill. Accounts differed as to the strength of that package, but I think fair-minded people would say that it was certainly the most consequential legislation that we were expected to review and vote on border security in decades. But we decided against that because in the end, it was determined two things. Number one, Biden already had sufficient authority under existing law to use his executive powers to get border security, just as Trump had done. And number two, even if we passed a new law, he probably wouldn't follow it anyway. So we just needed a new leader. So this whole exercise was futile and gave political cover to Democrats. So we decided against advancing it. So I would apply that logic. Much of it, I think, has certain intellectual force. I would apply that logic to this situation and say, you know, I'm for the substance of H.R. 2. I'm for what they're advancing in the House. I would vote for it if it came over here. But I do think there's an important other side to the argument, which is, hey, let's just focus on Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, because we could conceivably, as we engage in this back and forth in Congress, we could lose the war. We could lose the war against Russia, thereby causing the occupation of Ukraine, the threat from the Baltic Sea all the way, you know, down the entire European continent to our NATO neighbors, causing a massive increase in American forces needed to help shore up our NATO allies. We are treaty bound to do that, distracting us from the threat of China. These are high level threats. The last thing we need right now is we should be focused on our economy and the things back home.
Let me before I let you go, and you're going to have people pushing back on which one matters more, and I'm sure that you hear it from constituents and others constantly. As we speak, we're just about 12, 16 hours removed from Israel responding to Iran. Israel took out some members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, their Quds force, a general, people who were coordinating with Hezbollah, a terrorist organization funded by Iran, which engages near daily attacks on Israel. Israel took out two of those leaders. Iran responds by sending 350 ballistic missiles and drones, trying to indiscriminately kill as many Israelis as they could. Joe Biden thinks that just knocking these things down is success and good enough, and you don't have to fight anymore, and you shouldn't respond. Israel seemingly agreed to this by saying we're going to take Rafah, and then we hear that they engage strategic strikes against Iran, possibly against nuclear facilities, and other places. The response that you have to not only President Biden saying take the win, but this Israeli striking back, is Israel raising the stakes here?
Yeah, you know, I question many of the things in the run-up to this conflict that President Biden and his administration have done, just as I questioned whether our botched disengagement from Afghanistan was really what led to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So in this case, the fact that we just yesterday, the United States imposed new sanctions on Iran, sanctions which were long overdue, that's one indicator of just how behind this administration is. The notion separately, and to your point, the notion that we should tell the state of Israel that after the first ever attack occurs, 300 projectiles, drones and missiles coming out of Iran proper across the Middle East into the state of Israel, which is where they were intended. Blessedly, we shut all but one down. The notion that they should just be the bigger person, so to speak, because otherwise there's a fear of escalation, is inconsistent with their politics, human nature, and what the people of Israel want and need right now. They need to reestablish some measure of deterrence. They can do it through a narrow attack, which is what they did. I think it sends a message, hey, listen, mullahs, we're going to hit you. We can't not hit you. But we're going to make it, you know, proportionate. We're going to send a message. We don't want a broader regional war as well. It would be bad for Israel, be bad for Iran, be bad for humanity. I think that's the message that should have been sent. I think You know, curiously, Israel already sort of understood that anyway. Now we need to support them so that they can defend themselves against terrorists and you know, uproot Hamas and their leadership from Gaza and the rest of the area, and hopefully deter other terrorists from attacking Israeli people moving forward. No, by the way, there are Americans involved in this whole thing as well. We have American hostages. We've had American deaths, American freedom fighters partaking in the IDF to help defend the state of Israel and our shared values. So let's keep that in mind as well.
We will have many more hopeful opportunities to engage in this. Senator Todd Young, senior senator from Indiana, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. There is more coming up. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today. I would only hope we're at the place now where we can admit that remote work for the masses doesn't work. It doesn't work. Having people work from home does not create a better product. In the main, it creates an inferior product, but this is a new look at the conversation that working from home creates inferior ideas. That's interesting. Tony Katz Today. Good to be with you. 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY. This is a story from the boss over at Nike, John Donahoe. Or is it Donahoe? It's Donahoe. I figured it out. And he thinks that remote work is responsible for the slowdown in innovation. And his point is that they spent 2.5 years at home, did Nike employees. And quote, it's really hard to do bold, disruptive innovation to develop a boldly disruptive shoe on Zoom. You need the energy in the room, kitten. You need the feel. David Letterman, whose politics disgust me, and I always thought it was a real travesty, and I think a shirking of his audience, that towards the end, he decided to be this guy, so political as opposed to so entertaining, because he could have been cutting and dynamic, and he could have gone in all the directions. He could have been so incredibly well delivered. And he decided instead just to call Sarah Palin names, and it was gross, and shame on him. Really and truly, shame on him. But he... It was infamous for keeping the studio with Ed Sullivan Theater, wherever he was when he was back in NBC days, very cold. I was in I once attended a performance of David Letterman, saw the show, and it's chilly. And his theory was it kept the comedy fresh. I think there's something to that, but really to the idea of innovation being tactile. That if you get smart people together in a room and you're talking about things and you really are setting egos aside but trying to come up with cool ideas and build on cool concepts, you can get better ideas and better ideas. I think that's true of, for example, the writer's room. If you're writing a drama, okay, you can do that over a macchiato or whatever your latte is at Starbucks and talk about how you're writing your screenplay. But when it comes to comedy, there's a reason they do writer's rooms. And they, because you need to hear the joke. I've never been in a writer's room. I don't know. Maybe I'd do well in there. Maybe I wouldn't. But you want that bouncing. You want that back and forth. You do. You wanna kind of experience how other people take it in, and then you can realize maybe where's the tweak, where's the sight gag, where's the maneuver, etc. I've never designed a shoe. And what Donahoe is worried about is that they're falling behind on innovation and giving up market share to On Running. I think, is that the same thing as OnCloud? And Hoka, H-O-K-A. In hindsight, it turns out it's really hard to do bold, disruptive innovation to develop a boldly disruptive shoe on Zoom. Our teams came back together 18 months ago in person, and we recognized this. So we realigned our company. And over the last year, we've been ruthlessly focused on rebuilding our disruptive innovation pipeline along with our iterative innovation pipeline. Wow, it's a lot of buzzwords there. Translation, we were crap when we let people work from home because the work was subpar. Now we're back at it. The work is better. I expect there will be other companies that take their cues from Nike and say, that's it, everybody back in the office, sooner rather than later. This is Tony Katz Today.
When I think about Donald Trump, I think about this case in New York. I mean, I'm looking at the Democrats right now. And again, primarily, I have voted Democrat throughout my life, but I'm utterly disgusted with what I'm seeing, because it seems to me that they're trying to use the law and the courts. They've clearly politicized this thing with Donald Trump because they can't come up with a strategy to offset the momentum he's clearly gained. In at least five polls, he's up. He's up in the polls over Biden, at least five polls that I counted. That's the reality of the situation. Despite the counts against them, the indictments against them, being impeached twice and all of this other stuff, he is the presumptive GOP nominee. And you don't seem to have the issues in your favor, you believe. So because of that, you're going to manipulate the system as best as you possibly can to avoid him possibly running for re-election again. That appears to be their strategy, but I'm here to tell you, it's not working.
When you've lost Stephen A. Smith, oh, everybody has got it. This trial is ridiculous. Never mind just the concept of it, but the delivery, the execution. You only now have a jury, but who knows if you'll be able to keep all 12. You don't have any alternates yet. You lost two yesterday because one of them lied to get on the jury. And you've got an entire left-wing media that's very okay if Trump haters are on the jury. But if anybody is sympathetic to Trump, they have to be thrown off, because that would end democracy. Good Lord. Tony Katz. Tony Katz Today. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. On Instagram, go check it out at Tony Katz, and of course X at Tony Katz as well. No, the problem with Stephen Smith's argument is that it isn't going back early enough to when all of us were saying exactly that. That all of this was political. This is not a question of whether or not you like Trump or are going to vote for Trump. And me, you know where I was. I would have rather had DeSantis. I think it would have been a much easier lift. But here we are. And certainly Biden, being this very, very old, sad man, an incapable man, the kind of guy who goes around saying, what do you want, freedom or democracy? I mean, that was the latest gaffe. That was the latest insanity. What would you rather have? It's the choice between freedom or democracy. What in the world? Who let this man out? Where are his meds? Why does this keep happening? Somebody, for the love of God, do something about this.
Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Could you say that again, sir?
Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America.
Yes.
Every time Joe Biden says something else, they make it easier for Trump to win. Now, I say this also knowing full well that I'm still a believer that he will not be the nominee. Biden will not be the nominee, and I'm willing to bet on it. I'm willing to do the whole thing. I could be wrong. Can you imagine the Democrats are going to run this? The reason that people are voting for Trump isn't because of love. Right? If you take a look at these things anecdotally, it's not because they like him or respect him. They might think he's a fighter, but it's not that. It's that if these are my choices, at least Donald Trump knows where he is. Or at least he's got me convinced that he more often knows where he is than Joe Biden, because Joe Biden is saying things like this.
Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America.
Yeah.
No one knows what that even means. But then again, he learned that phrase after talking to François Mitterrand, the former president of France, who's been dead for three decades. I mean, this is where we're at. But my point about Stephen A. Smith is that he is not going back far enough. He is not saying anything we don't know. Every bit of every indictment was political. No one asked if you like Donald Trump. No one cares. What we are discussing is reality. This trial that we are looking at, that it is absolutely clear and obvious that the White House was involved in, clear and obvious that, of course, they played a part. This was Trump. So it's day four of this trial. This is the hush money trial. He gave money to Stormy Daniels to be quiet. Not even a crime. Two people engaging in contract. But he wrote it from column A, an account in column A instead of column B, whatever you want to call that. And so the district attorney decides it's a felony. It's not a felony. It's a misdemeanor. He decided, we'll charge it as a felony anyway. We'll do this. We'll do that. We'll come at it from this angle, that angle. That's an abuse of the system that undoubtedly the White House was a part of. So there's Trump in the, he's like the parking garage or the lobby of the courthouse. And so it's a little echoey, but you can hear him.
So thank you very much. As you know, I've been saying for a long while, this is a rigged trial. It's coming from the White House. They have White House DOJ people in the trial, in the DA's office, representing the DA because he's probably not smart enough to represent himself. Guy got elected using Trump, and you're not supposed to do that.
Well, the gag order's working gangbusters, kids. I mean, that gag order, whoo, that is working great. And Trump is screaming, take the gag order off. This is a violation of my First Amendment rights. This has got to end right now. You take this trial. You take Fannie Willis and the whole conversation about RICO. You take the Jack Smith indictments regarding January 6th. These things were planned as election interference. What I think is important here is that we are not debating this part of it. You might debate that Trump is guilty of something. I can't stop you from that. Share your thoughts, share your ideas. We can agree or disagree. You might say that Trump has done something immoral and therefore you're not going to vote for him. I'm not going to stop you from that. I wouldn't try. Share your thoughts. We might agree. We might disagree. But you'll note that those conversations have absolutely nothing to do with the subject at hand, the discussion we're having, the conversation we are having, which is the utilization of all the indictment of all these, the indictments coming out when they did, the trials happening as they are occurring. That is all political to influence an election. That is not debate. There is no room for debate here. As a matter of fact, the people who refuse to accept that as fact are broken. Broken. Guys, let's not be those people. And I know there are people who listen to the show or part of the show who don't always agree with me. Notice I didn't say to you that you're wrong for not liking him. I never said that. Don't like the dude. It makes no difference to me. Notice I never said you're wrong for not sharing his policy views. I never said that. It makes no difference to me. We can discuss and debate these things. We are not debating what is factual, what happened. And what happened is a series of indictments came out at a time to do damage to a guy running for president. And if you're okay with that, I'm going to say again, those people who are okay with that are broken. And the system is absolutely broken. This conversation of the system, our government being used against the citizenry, is factual. We should be disgusted. And we should further be disgusted by the idea that this is done to try and keep us from engaging a vote as opposed to allowing us to be able to utilize our vote. This goes back to Colorado. We are going to take Donald Trump off the ballot because the 14th Amendment, and he's an insurrectionist, and he shouldn't be on the ballot. That was the state of Colorado saying to the people of Colorado, why should you have a say? What if you do the wrong thing? You can't be trusted if you do the wrong thing. That, by the way, you will say sounds eerily familiar because that was the position of Never Trumpers. never Trumpers, who could not believe these so-called leaders of the conservative movement, who when they were saying, oh, you can't vote for Trump, and people said, oh, I'm voting for Trump, and they said, excuse me, we decide who you vote for. You spend your money on going on cruises with us. We tell you it's not Trump. And the people said, and they voted for Trump, and they lost their minds because they lost their audience. Because they forgot that they weren't actually in charge of anything. And eventually people would actually like to get into winning instead of losing, but being very principled about it and looking good in a suit. And of course, the cruises and the speaking fees and the Christmas parties, etc. You got to remember that people don't want to lose at every second, at every moment, not even putting up a fight. And then they're getting called racist while they other people demand they pay more taxes. You don't know where these people are at. You don't know how unbelievably PO'd they are. That's nutty to me. And the entire Never Trump movement was laughable. And while I do read a National Review, and I find myself in agreement or disagreement, I think they've got a couple smart people there. I read City Journal, unbelievably smart people over there. I have not forgotten. I don't want you to think I've ever forgotten that they put out this letter and this issue, this magazine, all these people, why you shouldn't vote for Trump. And I was told these were the conservative leaders, and some of them are friends. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. Never communism, yes. Never Trump? The only letter I wrote, it's out there. You can find it. I wrote an open letter to my kids. It was the first time I ever acknowledged my children in print. Because I said that wrong. I acknowledged the existence of my children in print. I acknowledge the existence of my children. I'm not Hunter Biden, for the love of God. I'm just super private, outrageously private. I don't talk about the family. I don't use names. I don't do anything like that. Just for me, it doesn't work. And so I wrote this open letter to my children saying, look, there were two choices in the election of 2016. I knew Trump wasn't a conservative. I didn't know what he was really. But with Trump, I had a 50-50 chance of getting what I want. And with Hillary Clinton, I have absolutely no chance of getting what I want. So daddy's going to go with the odds. That, to me, is probably the most conservative position one could have. I took a look at my reality, and even if I didn't like it, I said, which movement, which moment, which avenue, which path, which road gives me the best opportunity to get what I'm looking for? And it worked out pretty good for Tony. Voting for Trump was a good idea, and I voted for him again. Absolutely. And if my choice is Trump or Biden, you don't have to worry about me. There's going to be no debate. Just like there can be no debate over how these trials have come forward, and they were meant and designed and developed to be done at certain times, for the indictments to come down at certain times, to have a maximum amount of effect on the election. And that's unforgivable. Absolutely unforgivable. And this is why I say to the people who are okay with this, you are broken. You are broken. You cannot look at this and say, yep, this is America at its best. No, this is America at its holy hell. What are we doing? This is America at a crossroads. And we are not giving this enough attention, the attention that I argue it is incredibly due. Look what we've done. And I know what you're about to say, and you're not wrong. Tony, what's this we crap? Look what they've done. This is where I need people like Stephen A. Smith to be. By the way, Stephen A. Smith from ESPN. Maybe I had to say that. Yeah, probably better I did. And I don't agree with the man on everything. I don't agree with the man on much, actually. But this is where I need people like Stephen A. Smith to take this and then, for lack of a better word, help them see the next part of it. If this trial regarding Alvin Bragg and the hush money is political and was set up by the Democrats and set up by the White House and not working, how then do you not make the jump to the other indictments? you would at least take a look at them, mention them, think about them, let it run around your brain for a while. If this is possible, that is possible. And you take a look at how they all lined up, and my gosh, what lines up like that? In what world do all the dominoes align so they'll just perfectly knock down? And if the importance of someone like Stephen A. Smith, not that I agree with him and not that everybody's an ESPN watcher, is that he has an audience that maybe you don't get to, maybe I don't get to. But if he starts having that conversation there, maybe that conversation does grow. And from that, you realize how important what it is we're doing here and what you do on social media and the conversations that you have with your kids or with friends or with others by not buying into the whole New York Times nonsense and by being someone who's totally proactive in trying to get the data. How, no matter how hard it is to swim against the grain while everybody's calling you all sorts of names, there you are saying, yeah, but wait a second. You did it on COVID and a whole host of things. You're doing it here. And so somebody else now sees that conversation, hears that conversation, and they start asking questions about it. Remember that so much of what mainstream media does is to try and keep us from thinking and try and keep us from talking. But when we think and we talk, we start to realize that some things don't make sense. That's what Stephen A. Smith is sharing. And while he needs to see the rest of it, sharing this, it's good. Oh, and it's true. And paying somebody hush money isn't a crime. You might think it's immoral, but that's fine. It's not a crime. This whole trial is nonsense. This is Tony Katz Today. I have to assume that Israel won't be engaging any more hits on Iran over the weekend. And of course, Monday, well, for them, yeah, no, it'll happen on Monday. It'll be Passover. I'm thinking somehow it'll be Sunday. No, it'll still be Monday for them. Tony Katz Today, and I don't know if they're going to make a hit then, although they may be worried about taking hits from Hezbollah and whatever is left of Hamas. They engaged in the response, hitting the military targets, as we knew they would do. Israel is not Iran. They weren't trying to kill millions of civilians. They were showing Iran that they won't take their nonsense. And yes, we can reach you. Anytime we choose, we can reach you. That seems to be the purpose here. I think you need a larger purpose, personally. But is this response enough? And will we see more? I don't think we'll see more from Israel. But at any moment they feel that Iran's getting too close to a nuclear weapon, they're going to act. They're going to act unilaterally. And that is something we might see over the weekend. We'll keep our eyes on it. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. Monday, everyone. Take care.